good afternoon, Juno, on a really wonderful 61-degree day sitting out there in the sun. It's just 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. Great lineup of guests today. I'm really excited. David Bromberg is in town to kick off Juno Jazz and Classics. He'll be coming on to tell us a little bit about his concert this evening. Larry Johansson is doing an opening for First Friday, new photographs and old from the archipelago. So we'll be talking with Larry. Mishaya Lake and the Little Bighorns will be in town on Saturday, May 3rd, so we'll be talking to them about their concert. Again, another part of Juno Jazz and Classics. And it's kickoff week for the STEM summer camp. Becca Parks will drop in to tell us about the opportunities for young folks to learn a little bit about science and engage in some real great activities this summer. Right now it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned for Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge in South Dakota says court reporters for four state judges must produce transcripts for hearings involving Indian children. Thursday's ruling is part of an ongoing lawsuit by Native parents and tribes. They claim state and county officials routinely violate the Indian Child Welfare Act. Victoria Wicks reports.
In late March, four state judges defied an order from federal judge Jeffrey Viken to produce transcripts so that plaintiffs' attorneys could use them to prove the brevity of emergency hearings. Judges Wally Eklund, Thomas Trimble, Craig Fifley, and Robert Mandel said in documents filed with the court that the federal judge does not have the authority to invade state sovereignty. They did acknowledge that Viken may have the power to compel their court reporters to produce the transcripts. And that is what Viken has done. He directed court reporters to transcribe certain hearings and turn the documents over to plaintiffs by June 1st. Some transcripts have already been released. One of plaintiffs' attorneys, Dana Hanna, says he has had an opportunity to review some ICWA hearing transcripts.
In many of those transcripts, judges ordered that parents should lose custody of their children for the next 60 days without ever telling those parents, without anybody telling those parents, what it is that they supposedly did wrong, or giving them any opportunity to be heard to oppose the states taking their kids. In hearings, on the average, lasted maybe 2 minutes.
Hanna says the transcripts are likely to decide the case. About 100 transcripts taken over the past 5 years are subject to release. Abuse and neglect cases concern children and are kept confidential, so names and personal information are redacted before transcripts become public record. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The U.S. Interior Department has proposed a rule change that would allow Alaska tribes to apply to have their lands held in trust. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the policy could vastly expand tribal sovereignty in Alaska.
Tribal advocates are celebrating the department's announcement. Native American Rights Fund attorney Heather Kendall Miller says it corrects a policy that for decades excluded Alaska tribes from a crucial federal law.
This is huge. It is a major shift in federal policy that treats Alaska tribes similarly to tribes in the lower 48.
If the Interior Secretary agrees to take a tribe's land in trust, it creates a patch of Indian country, essentially a reservation, where state authority is limited and tribal power is enhanced. The Interior Department cites it as a way to improve public safety in remote Native villages scarcely visited by state troopers. The state of Alaska, though, says the policy conflicts with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Kip Knutson, the governor's federal liaison, says it's important to defend the integrity of the 1971 settlement.
I mean, it's sort of the underpinning of our land status in the state, and it's an underpinning of a tremendous amount of economic activity in the state. And so if we start unraveling it or amending it, there's probably a lot of things that have to be taken into consideration.
In the Settlement Act, Congress revoked the trust status of all but one reservation in Alaska and instead transferred title to millions of acres and nearly $1 billion to newly created Native corporations. The state argues the law also removed the Interior Secretary's power to create new trust land in Alaska. Kendall Miller says Congress never took that authority away. The Interior Department now kicks off a 60-day comment period on the proposed rule. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
In May 1923, the 14-cent stamp featuring Brule Sioux leader Hollow Horn Bear was issued in the U.S. The design was based on a photograph of the chief. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. A couple of community notes here. At 4:30, right after this program, over at the Jack is Duds and Suds. This is a clothing sale for men with the Brown Boots Costume Company, Alaskan Dames, the Sequence Board Shop, Alaskan Outdoor Warehouse and Embroidery, Salt Alaska, the restaurant, and Alaskan Brewing Company, all coming together at Juneau Arts and Culture Center to provide an opportunity for folks to buy a little bit of clothing and sample a little bit of beer. So that's the first Friday event over at the Jack, starting at 4:30 and running until 7:30 tonight. And this Saturday's hike, tomorrow on May 3rd, will be on the Perseverance Trail. This is from the Juneau Parks and Recreation. They'll hike to the end of the trail or up to Granite Creek, depends on weather and snow conditions. They ask that participants wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, bring trekking poles, wear warm layers of clothing, and bring plenty of food and water. Meet at the end of the Basin Road at 9:30 in the morning tomorrow, and no dogs or firearms requested, please. So the Juneau Parks and Recreation starting up their annual Saturday hikes. David Bromberg will be in town tonight to kick off the first day of what is looking like a really wonderful jazz and classics for Juneau coming on. So let's listen to a little bit of Bromberg's music. This is off of a CD called Use Me.
I went out today, I hardly had a choice. Couldn't stand the sound of my own voice. You should have heard me talking on the telephone. All morning long, nothing good to say. You came and tried to help me, but I pushed you away. I said, I'm too hot to handle. You better leave me alone. Blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. Blue is falling on me again. We live together in this place and time, but I feel all alone and it's an awful crime. I've got to pull away for a day or two. I want to dig a hole so deep and wide I can bury all the hurt and the pain inside. I'm afraid of myself and I'm afraid for you. Blue is falling again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. Blue is falling on me again. Thank you. making jokes. I'll be riding high. Then something turns the key. It all goes awry. It starts pushing me down, down to my knees. I always hate it when I act this way. I try to stop it from coming, but it comes anyway. It's nothing about you. It's all about me.
Hard to characterize that guy's music. Kind of goes from blues to western to folk to singer-songwriter stuff that's really hard to categorize at all. But he's in town, and we'll be playing tonight at the A&B Hall starting at 7 o'clock, the kickoff event for Juno Jazz and Classics. With me in the studio right now is a First Friday participant and a welcome guest that we've talked to him before. Larry Johansson is here and is going to be unveiling his wilderness gallery of designated wilderness areas in the Alexander Archipelago. He's taken over the back room of the Silver Bow Inn and will be on display tonight from 4 to 8. He'll be there to kind of walk around and show you his photographs, and then they'll be up for a while longer through the summer. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I
you
appreciate
bet.
It.
So, What in your collection are we going to see that is not in the book, which we should probably mention, by the way, that you have a wonderful collection of photographs, which is a collection of the 14 wilderness areas. And then I think is there a separate book that covers the 15th?
There are actually 18 wilderness areas
18, yeah.
in the Alexander Archipelago. There are 19 in the Tongass National Forest.
Right.
And the book was inspired by the coming event of the 50th anniversary, which is this year.
Mm-hmm.
And wilderness has always been a big part of
the 50th anniversary of the
Wilderness Act.
The Wilderness Act, right.
Correct. And for me, growing up in Ketchikan during the 70s, it was a tumultuous time, interesting time for the creation of wilderness areas. And I happened to have a front row seat in a community that didn't quite know what to do with wilderness. There was a lot of fear. There was a lot of misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was a logging town at the time.
It was a logging town. It still
right.
is a hard-working, blue-collar town. But I think their perceptions of what wilderness is and what it can be have changed with passage of time. And I was able to see it firsthand and then spend many years working with a small ship line that got me to many of these different places. And I saw some places that most people, even locals, don't get a chance to see.
Mm-hmm.
And through the years, a collection of photographs, and the last couple of years, I've been semi-retired. The company has folded, and I was given the opportunity to go back and photograph even more of the areas. And yes, the book has about 100 pictures, but I must have taken 10,000 pictures. And
wow.
So the gallery is fresh images that I have enlarged on a canvas medium. And I'm beginning to really like the canvas medium. Photographic purist, well, it's not the medium of choice with photographic purists, but I like it because of the texture that it transmits. And it has almost a painted feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're larger, and they're meant to be viewed from a slight distance. Or most people, when you're looking at photographs, you got to get real close because they're pretty small, and you notice the detail. But with the canvas prints, you walk into a room, and wow, there they are. They're meant to. the wow factor is a big element of the medium. So I think that's what people will get when they walk into the back room is hopefully they'll get that wow. They'll be impressed as wilderness can be impressive.
Are you doing a standing display for the entire summer, or are you going to rotate different pieces in?
Well, I am going to rotate different pieces in simply because I ran out of room to put them all up as I was working. And I had an idea that I would want to revolve through some as well. I had a hard time narrowing the choice down, so these are some of my personal favorites that that have not been made into prints or in the book either. They're fresh and original, and not the entire collection, but a pretty good representation of the wilderness areas in Southeast Alaska. And that's the defining theme of the gallery is wilderness on the inside passage. So they have to be, pictures are all of designated wilderness. So there were lots of pictures that I had that could have passed as wilderness, obviously, but they didn't make the criteria. And so this gallery focused specifically on those areas in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
When you're taking photographs of a, and you're trying to, I guess my question is: do you feel like you're recording when you are in the wilderness area? Are you thinking about what you're seeing and trying to collect that, or are you thinking about who you're going to show it to? Where's your focus when you do this?
Well, I think I'm big on composition. Mm-hmm. I think that's what captures me first is how things are aligned, and changing perspective, and I come across a scene, sometimes I can feel a picture coming on, but I don't know quite where it is yet. But I have a sense of it. And I'll work with different angles and different perspectives, change the camera point of view, move around until I've got several images in which I look at later. I never really know if I've got something until I see it and it settles with me as to what I wanted. If I was able to capture the feeling that I had when I was provoked to raise the camera, put it that way. So, in a process is with a huge amount of raw material, I sometimes go back through things and find pictures and that I never did quite find the way that I wanted to originally, and rework the photograph. And come up sometimes with some things that I'm surprised that I missed the first time around. It comes to me. And a lot of these pictures that I've developed into this gallery are the result of contemplation and analysis and knowing that perhaps there was a photograph there but not ready to print off anything until I was sure that I had pulled it out from the scene that I was photographing. There are a couple of photographs. There's one of an area that I knew was going to be great. I went up to the Russell Fjord Wilderness at Yakutat and hiked. Well, first we drove to the very end of the road, dangerous river at the end of the road. I saw two cars on the way, a 30-mile drive. And we crossed over, and my companions and I walked down to the lake. It's one of those moments where you're simply astounded at the beauty before you. And I knew that the images I was going to capture, that there was something there that I was going to be able to produce. But it took me quite a while going through all the different pictures to really match up what I produced in a canvas print to the feeling that I felt when I walked in onto the scene. And I think a lot of photographers are that way. They're never really satisfied with what they've come out with. So this maybe this is a collection of worked through photographs that have finally matured and are ready now to be seen.
There were two phrases. One was that you when you're provoked to raise the camera. It's a wonderful choice of verb. I get it, but I'm wondering, what is the provocation? When you saw that lake, was it when it opened out in front of you? Was it when you walked down to it? Where's the moment when you're provoked to raise the camera?
I think for me,
generically, I'm trying to get to some kind of sense of when you know that it's right. Time to start taking pictures.
Well, I'll come upon a scene, and the fertility of the scene will become quite evident. And as I mentioned before, what draws me to take the picture is composition. So the first thing that I will look for is, okay, I've got a wonderful scene, but what's going to make it resonate? What's going to make it stand out and be memorable and maybe say something more about what I'm feeling about what I'm seeing?
Mm-hmm. And so it's really a sensitivity to your own feelings as much as it is to the composition or the thing that's coming through the camera. It's you're dealing with an emotion inside yourself when this is going on.
Yes, it's photography is a very personal medium, I think, and the point of view. What I want people to when they see my photographs is to try to understand my point of view, is to try to be in the place where I was, and that's easier said than done. I think for me the way that I do that is through composition. And how I compose the photograph from the perspective and point of view, by doing so, I can highlight certain angles, bring out, focus in on certain elements and objects in the photograph that to me resonate, and that's what I try to present in the images that I capture is that collection of composition of objects and angles and light. Light obviously is photographers paint, and that's a key element of the whole thing.
The other word that you used was when you rework the composition, and I guess it always has seemed to me, I grew up in the days of 35 millimeter photography where you couldn't see seven images down there at the scene and see which one you wanted to keep. Isn't that cheating?
Well, no, I'm from the same age. I've worked in a dark room and mm-hmm. worked with the film, and it's kind of funny. I teach a class up at the school on photography, and I was trying to explain to the kids what a dark room was and and what burning was and what dodging was.
Yeah.
And to held a flashlight up and said, imagine this is your light projector shining down. This is dodging. This is burning. And uh-huh. And I think they got it when I used the flashlight analogy. But I come from that traditional school too. There is so much photography these days that is, I call it digital makeup. It's almost too much.
Huh.
And I'm very sensitive about wilderness, about trying to capture what I saw instead of accentuating it to the point where it's almost disrespectful to wilderness itself because it's unreal.
Uh-huh.
So my photographs, I tend to try to back off on the digital makeup and use the tools that I have to accurately describe what was there and what I saw. So that will be a big difference in my photography than I think some other ones were. It's obviously creative photography, which is not my style.
I guess one last thing we need to talk about. You are doing a set of tours in Juneau. As I understand it, you take people around now for a 90-minute walk through the streets of downtown Juneau.
Are you doing that
this summer?
Yeah, it's kind of something to keep me out of trouble, basically. I'm going to be doing some walking tours, and I have done many of them before, and thought that I did them, that it was going to be a summer like it was last summer, which is I'm counting on. So,
I'm hoping it is, yeah.
So, yeah, I'll take a small group and we'll be doing walking tours. It's almost a hobby of mine as well to do it. My next book is actually working on material that walking tour, I had all these stories and I want to put them in a book form, but until I do, it's going to be a walking tour. But I did a lot of original research on some characters and people that I don't think have been anywhere pulled together in one collection like I have right now. So that's a prelude to my next book, The Characters of Juno.
Well, we should mention here that Monday through Friday at 10 in the morning, you're in front of the Red Dog Saloon. It's $20 per person. You'll take up to 12 and take them on a walk around town.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, I hope it goes well.
Thank you.
And today the opportunity is beginning at 4 o'clock this afternoon at the back room of the Silver Bow Inn. 4 to 8, Larry will be there, and his photographs will be up on the wall. And then through September, we'll have the chance to see a rotating collection of these wonderful photographs from the wilderness areas of Alaska. So, Larry, thank you so much, for being the photographer and observer of the wilderness areas that you are, and thank you for putting the show on for us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet.
This is Bird Note. Almost half of all migratory shorebirds nesting in North America, including the American golden plover we're hearing, migrate through the Cheyenne Bottoms wildlife area in central Kansas. Shorebirds in Kansas? Yes. Almost all of the continent's Wilson's phalaropes, long-billed dowitchers, and white-rumped bairds and stilt sandpipers rest and refuel at the wetlands here. That's more than 500,000 shorebirds representing 40 species that stop at the site during spring migration. But aren't they birds of the coast? Well, it turns out they're flying a great oval route, making use of what nature provides. In autumn, with their long wings and rapid flight, they take advantage of favorable winds. In the east, they head from Canada and the Arctic, across the Maritimes and New England, and south down the coast. Then in spring, when shallow wetlands on the Great Plains bloom with invertebrates, they fly north through the heartland of the country. So, for good reason, these marshes have been designated wetlands of international importance. Far from the coast, shorebirds find here what they need. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. I'm Michael Stein.
I'm Sherry Williams, and I am a member of KTOO's Summit Club. I've listened to KTOO for decades, eons practically. I really like the programming. I particularly like local news, music that isn't canned. There's just so much content. I do remember supporting it at a very minimal level quite a few years ago. Just as I've kind of gotten more established, I've just increased my support.
Increase your support as well at KTOO.org.
It's about 28 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest is here to tell us about a set of really exciting opportunities for primarily for kids, but also for parents to hear the wonderful stories from their kids after they get done with these things. Becca Parks is with the STEM program here in town, Science,
Technology, Engineering, and Math.
Thank you very much for all of those letters. Okay, and STEM is this great program that is part of the Juno Economic and Development Conference and gives people the opportunity to engage in science. Great, great programs that kids can engage in. And this summer, we've got some amazing opportunities once again.
I'm pretty excited. We're continuing with a lot of our classics, and we're bringing back some old classics. Our underwater robotics camp, the Sea Perch. We've built those in the schools with students, and it used to be part of our NOAA Send a Sea program, but there was just so much going on in that we've broken those out into two camps. So we have underwater robotics, where in 1 week your middle school students will get to build and learn to drive their own underwater robot, and we know a lot of kids will take those home at the end of camp and use them to inspect boats and look for fish.
So this is the answer to what drones are in the water, right?
These ones, they're tethered, so they're not going to go off on their own like the drones are.
But you could actually use this to look at your kid could check out the growth on your boat and say, hey, Dad, we need to take this sucker out here.
Yeah, you need to invest in a camera for it, but they've got really affordable underwater cameras now, and it's kind of a fun way to go and look at the bottom of your boat.
Uh-huh. Okay. So the sea perch, the student who does this particular one gets to take the vehicle home with them. They build it, and it's theirs.
Yes.
Hey, that is so cool.
And they do. What I love about that one is it's a great introduction to basic building. So they're cutting the PVC, drilling the holes, soldering together their controller, breaking apart the Cat 5 to make sure that all their corrections are great. So it's an awesome way to introduce them to skills that they're going to be able to use on all kinds of projects.
All kinds of projects. Yeah, amazing stuff. Okay, so make your own submarine, take it home with you,
yep.
and use it to find out what's going on in the water around your house. Huh? Okay.
That one's kind of connected to our NOAA Send to Sea Camp, and we've had that for many years in partnership with NOAA, and NOAA continues to step up and take a bigger and bigger role, but I just can't encourage kids enough. It has a really small enrollment, so if you want to go to that camp, we encourage you to apply very early, and it's coming up soon. That one is June 2nd to 7th out at the Auk Bay Lab, and kids will get to actually work with and interact with the NOAA scientists. They get to fish a lot in their free time, which I know the kids all love, and mm-hmm. I know that fishing camp in town isn't happening this summer, so this is a good alternative.
Right, and this is the NOAA Sun to Sea program.
Mm-hmm. And that's June 2nd to 7th, and it's grades 7 to 9. We've had a lot of younger students interested in that program, so I'll say this on the air, hoping it reaches a couple people. If you have a younger student, I encourage you to fill out the application that's online for that and put your name on the wait list. If for some reason we don't fill up for that regular age range, we'll take the younger kids. Yeah.
Okay, good.
So you get your name on the wait list now. I know we've already got a couple on there.
We're going to do this a couple of times on here, but let's make sure people know where they have to do, what they have to do in order to get signed up for these programs, because some of these are really exciting, and they're also fairly limited.
Yes, they sell out.
So how do people do this?
If you go to stemak.org,
okay.
You can link to our summer programs there. There's a clear button right on that homepage. And then each camp has its own registration. So you just scroll down that list, find the one you want to go to, click through, payments online, everything you need is right there. If for some reason you can't find it online, I know there's some cache sites, our old, like last year's summer camps people are running into, just call me, 523-2334.
Okay. All right. So tell us about the rest of these now.
Okay, so the next one is our first LEGO Robotics programming camp.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really great introduction to learning how to program. The kids do some building, but we want to make sure they know that it's not a LEGO building camp, but they take robots and they program them to be able to do different obstacles, to go grab something from one part of a board and bring it over here. They'll learn how to make loops in a program. They learn how to use different sensors. And we walk them through all those steps that then a lot of those kids go on and are part of first LEGO League teams in the fall. So this is kind of that skill building. It's like sending your soccer player to soccer camp so that they have more fun on their team in the fall and their skills are a little bit better. This is that for the first LEGO League. But even if you're not on a team, it's a great way to get introduced to programming and see what it's all about.
And this program is for grades 4 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And this starts on June 23rd through the 27th. It repeats on July 7th through 11th. And again on June 23rd to 27th and July 7th to 11th. So there's four separate programs.
Right. So it's 2 weeks, but there's morning and afternoon sessions in each.
Okay.
And for beginners, you can go to any one of the beginner sessions and it won't make that much of a difference. For people that are just getting in or that have been involved, there's two different kinds of robots and programming languages that we use. So those first 2 weeks of camp we're actually going to do locally, and it's going to use the NXT. So that's the old the computer, the brain of the robot mm-hmm. that we've been using for a long time. And then July 7th to 11th is when we're going to bring in our outside expert, Paul Keeney, who's come up for, I think, 4 or 5 summers now. And he's going to use the new block called the EV3 and do some new programming. And that's when we'll invite our advanced programmers to come too. And the afternoon session then will be for kids that have a little more experience, that already know how to use sensors and can really take advantage of what an expert Paul is.
Good. Okay. I got two more programs then.
Yeah.
We got kitchen chemistry, 4 to 6 grades.
Okay, so Kitchen Chemistry, you know, it's we've had this one. It's sold out every summer that we've offered it. We're very excited to have a new instructor this year. Bernadette Rosano is going to be leading that camp, and we're going to have some help from some professional chefs in town also. And that's a great one for parents to come out. We always have parent volunteers come just to... There's a lot of sharp knives and hot stoves involved, so it's one that parents can take advantage of and do some great cooking and learn how to pickle and do some molecular gastronomy stuff, too. It's a great camp.
July 21st through the 25th. The second time is July 28th through August 1st. Both
right.
Those are at Thunder Mountain High.
Right.
Okay, and then finally, Girls Rock Summer Science again.
And this is just our final... The Girl Scouts have done an amazing job of incorporating STEM activities into a lot of what they're doing. We've seen a lot of interest from our younger girls around town, but our more engineering-oriented camps have been almost all boys. So this was an option for those girls when we have one or two show up and they're feeling all alone at those camps. You can come to this one, and it'll be a comfortable environment for everyone, and we're going to do a whole range of activities from elephant toothpaste to some programming to some geocaching. We're just going to mix it up and have a really great time.
August 11th through the 14th. Again, it starts at Thunder Mountain High School, but it goes all over the area. And all of these programs are part of the JEDC STEM Summer Science Camps. Becca Parks is in charge of that program. You can get a hold of her at 523-2334, or you can go on their website, click the buttons, and get your kids registered for all of these wonderful programs.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 2nd of May, 2014. It was on this date, 1536, Anne Boleyn, the second wife of King Henry VIII, was arrested for high treason, adultery, and incest. She was intelligent, outspoken, she'd been raised in France, she had educated opinions about politics and religious reform. She came to the court when she was 20 years old to serve as lady-in-waiting. She soon caught the eye of the king, and for 7 years he courted her, and for 7 years she put him off. He managed to get his first marriage to Catherine of Aragon annulled by breaking with the Pope, declaring himself head of the Church of England. And then Anne Boleyn consented to marry him. Their early months of marriage were happy ones. Their first child, a girl, born in 1533, Elizabeth. Anne had several miscarriages after that, and she never gave Henry the son that he so desperately wanted. So he accused her of every capital offense he could think of, affairs and incest with her brother and plotting his murder and witchcraft, and she was convicted and sentenced to death, beheaded by sword. In her last letter to Henry VIII, Anne Boleyn wrote, "Your Grace's displeasure and my imprisonment are things so strange to me that what to write I am altogether ignorant. Never a prince had a wife more loyal in all duty and in all true affection than you have ever found in Anne Boleyn. But if you have already determined of me, and that not only my death, but an infamous slander, then I desire of God that he will pardon your great sin herein, and likewise my enemies, and that he will not call you to account for your unprincely and cruel usage of me at his general judgment seat, where both you and myself must shortly appear." It's the birthday of Dr. Benjamin Spock, born in New Haven, 1903, author of the Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care, which came out in 1946, which began, "You know more than you think you do." It was the parenting Bible for the post-war moms and dads raising the baby boomer generation. It's the birthday of Jerome K. Jerome, born in Walsall, England, 1859. It was he who said, "I like work. It fascinates me. I can sit and look at it for hours." And it was on this day, 1885, Good Housekeeping magazine went on sale, offering housekeeping tips, parenting advice, product reviews, and fiction. The Good Housekeeping Experiment Station tested and evaluated consumer goods and products that passed were given the Good Housekeeping seal of approval, which became part of the language. Here's a poem for today by Howard Moss, entitled Making a Bed. I know how to make a bed while still lying in it, and slip out of an imaginary hole as if I were squeezed out of a tube. Tug, smooth, the bed is made. And if resurrections are this easy, why then I believe in all of them. Lazarus rising from his tomb, Elijah at the vertical. Though death, I think, has more than clever household hints in mind, and wants the bed made once and for good. Making a Bed by Howard Moss, from his new selected poems, published by Athenaeum and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
That incredible voice that you are listening to is right here in the studio with me. That is Michelle Lake, and they are their band is in town. They're part of the incredible season of Juno Jazz and Classics. They're going to be doing a dance concert on 7:30 on Saturday, tomorrow night, over at the Prospector Hotel. And this is going to be an absolutely amazing concert because we have people who are absolutely amazing musicians here. So with me in the studio is Michelle Lake herself and Craig Florey, who is the guitar player with the group.
I play saxophone
and clarinet. Yeah. And Russell Welch, who is the guitar player. Okay,
right.
we'll get them right if we work around enough here. So, folks, welcome to beautiful downtown Juneau.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, you'll notice that we have typical Juneau weather. It's this way all the time.
I heard
all those rumors that you've heard are absolutely untrue.
It's very beautiful, but we hear that maybe the sun shines out a little bit more.
We have 200 rain days a year, so we're having a wonderful summer, though, and we're looking forward to summer like last year when we had weather like this for long stretches.
Beautiful. Really,
this is supposed to hold in through next Thursday. So we're talking
perfect.
About 60-degree days and 39, 38, 9-degree nights and like that. So
you
that's
know, it's
really
not much warmer in New Orleans right now.
Yeah, summer. So you hang out in New Orleans. That's home, right?
That's home base, yeah.
Yeah. So play the clubs down there on the street like that. That's how you got into this kind of thing, right?
Well, we got into it. We started out as street musicians, and now we play the clubs in New Orleans, and then we do various festivals all over the world, like this wonderful festival in Juneau.
Yeah, Juneau Jazz and Classics has been around for quite a while. It's a great combination because it's the best of both worlds
with
a little bit of in between and like that.
So. Oh, I got a fun fact from my mom today via text. My uncle used to live here, and I've got family here in Juneau, and it turns out we're playing in the same place. It used to be called the Armory, right?
Uh-huh.
My uncle's band played there in the 70s.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Fun fact, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Little Lake family history.
Cool.
So how did the band come together?
Well, we just kind of came together on the street. There's like this nice network of young traditional jazz musician players down there now. I was in a band called the Loose Marbles in 2007, mm-hmm. and then went to Europe for a while. And when I came back from Europe, I put a band together. And we still have three of the original members. And Craig just moved to New Orleans from Seattle. What was it, last year?
Half a year ago.
So we snatched him up right away. Russell moved to New Orleans in 2010, has been with us since then.
Craig, had you been like looking at a move? Were you playing in Seattle? And
yeah, I've been playing old jazz for a long time. These guys came up and they hired me in Seattle.
Okay,
and I did a little bit of I did a little tour with you guys.
Yeah. This before you moved.
Oh yeah,
and I thought I'd try New Orleans.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Well,
yeah. It's a beautiful place. A lot of music all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of work for a jazz musician in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Russell, how'd you come in the band?
I grew up in Mississippi, and my father, I had some family in New Orleans, and grew up with my father playing traditional New Orleans music, a little bit on the banjo,
uh-huh.
and New Orleans was always very close to Mississippi, so that's where me and my friends would go as a vacation, so I tried some other places, some other larger cities, and there wasn't as much music and not as many opportunities to play.
That piece we just listened to at the very beginning of this is real typical of something that goes on in your group that I've been listening to, and that is that you guys move real smooth between each other. There's this kind of like, there's almost no effort involved in getting the next thing to happen.
That is a wonderful compliment.
I'm glad it seems that way.
Well, I mean,
you really fight like hell up there on the stage.
It's traditional jazz, which is like a signature part of that, as opposed to other jazz, is collective improvisation and always having an ear for what's going on with the rest of the band.
Uh-huh. And an eye for what's going on.
That's right.
So if you're used to playing with Craig plays clarinet, so in a traditional jazz band setting, there's two other lead players playing at the same time. So
other
he has
horns.
To really hear where they're going, anticipate, and get better at that. So
yeah,
if you
going
good
back and forth between the trumpet and the trombone.
Oh, all at the same time, you got to stay out of each other's way.
Yeah, man, right. The so-called call and response.
So if you get used to that, then other parts of music, like dynamics and maybe anticipating what somebody's going to do, comes a little bit more naturally after that.
Yeah.
That's a great compliment. I
guess the other thing that really works well is how you bring her in. I mean, it's like you guys have got a fairly long instrumental gig, and then all of a sudden she's there, and it's like, you know, how'd that happen? And it's like you look around and you think,
magic.
I like you saying that we bring her in, because I usually feel like she starts looking at the crowd and gets a little sway and starts getting all angry, so we can kind of see.
Careful, Russell, I write the checks.
you still got something you got to forgive me.
Hey, that's right.
But I feel like you bring it in, because you start looking all crazy.
I dig it. The vocals is like the fourth horn,
we all try to support each other. And thank you, Craig. I like to think of my voice as an instrument
and really play
with the horns, not try to sing on top of the band or consider the band to be my backup band or anything like that.
Right.
I consider myself to be a part of the band and an instrument working with everybody else.
And not many singers will do that either, you know, like that I can play with that will do that. So I can just, it's kind of fun to like camp on a note behind you sometimes and harmonize and just kind of like.
Oh, I love that stuff.
I love sneaking, kind of like, and maybe just being so quiet, you don't really notice it, but you can hear it kind of interact with the
thanks
with
for the support,
the
buddy.
Yeah. Well, it's my job.
This
you know?
Is a, you listeners out there in radio land, you're getting a nice little preview to what you can experience at the concert
tomorrow.
That's
right.
Yeah. So this is not just a concert, it's an opportunity to dance.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Dance music.
Dance music. Right.
Yeah, not like pooch, 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 but you know.
Not that standing around.
But you can do that if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one reason
we don't mind.
This band survives is because there's a huge dance community in New Orleans. In fact, a lot of people move down there just to dance.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, like Mashiach says, all over the planet.
And that's one reason this band works all over the planet, is because it plays dance music, mostly for traditional American dances.
And
vintage jazz dancing.
Yeah. So when you're on tour like this, when you're in all these different places and like that, how much of a sense do you get of the different folks that you're playing to? In other words, is the response like the same, or do you get different responses in different areas, or how's that come down?
The response has been really good everywhere we go. I mean, I can't remember having a bad response. People in different cultures respond in different ways.
That's what I was kind of asking.
Dutch people are very reserved. In England, they're more reserved.
They have their etiquette where it's like they're supposed to wait until the end of the concert to clap or something like that. But we just you can still feel the energy in the room and play for each other. And then afterwards, they'll come up to you and then bestow you.
And you find out they had
crazy.
A really good time.
Yeah. So at first, I may have been a bit disarmed. Like, do they like it? Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah.
And then you get used to it. So some people are more expressive at first than others, but we usually get treated with a lot of hospitality.
Well, we've got a terrific opportunity to get treated with some of your hospitality because the concert is tomorrow night. The concert and the dance is tomorrow night at the Prospector Hotel. Starts at 7:30, and this is part of Juno Jazz and Classics. Folks, take advantage of the opportunity. New Orleans. I'm sorry? Not what?
I don't think it's at the Prospector.
Okay, then.
It's at the Old Armory. But we'll be partying at the Prospector later.
Yeah, well, okay. So where is it?
It's not at the Jack?
It's at the Old Armory.
So you're at the Jack.
It's called the Jack.
You're at the Jack.
But it used to be the Armory.
Okay. Right, okay. It's sponsored by the Prospector.
Thanks, Prospector.
I'm reading my notes. Thank
Glad
you so
we got
much.
That worked out.
Okay, yeah. Somebody's cell phone just made an interesting sound. Okay. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks,
I understand you're out of here and on your way in a helicopter up to the ice fields.
Oh, yes. We have a date with death at 4 o'clock.
Hey,
can't wait.
Have a great time up there. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you very much.
You bet. See you later.
Support comes from Kickback B&B, Rango Lodging by the Sea, offering private beachfront accommodations, a kitchenette, jacuzzi, satellite TV, and Wi-Fi. More information at 907-874-4242 or kickbackbnb.com.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, Evening at Egan presents Breaking Ice for Arctic Oil. Then the new environmentalists join unlikely partners with a common goal, safeguarding the Earth's natural resources while fighting for environmental justice in their communities. That's at 9:30, with Great Decisions in Foreign Policy at 10, and Platts Energy Week, BioCentury this week, and BBC News Night following. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
music by Nikki Hill. She's on Juno Jazz and Classics program. She's on May 9th doing a dance. And then Saturday on May 10th, it'll be Nikki Hill on the Blues Cruise. So Juno Jazz and Classics is well underway. We're going to hear a little bit more music here in a couple of seconds. Let me repeat a couple of announcements from earlier because one of them is starting in about a half hour. Duds and Suds over at the Jack tonight. 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Jack. Basically, it's Alaskan Brewing Company is putting up the beer, and then the Sequence Board Shop, Alaskan Dames, the Brown Boots Costume Company, Alaskan Outdoor Warehouse and Embroidery will all be there, and the No Host Bar is being provided by Salt Alaska, a new restaurant in town. So stop by the Jack and take a look at what's for sale over there and see if you can find some duds to have with your suds. Right now, a little bit of music from tonight's Juno Jazz and Classics Act. Here's another piece by the David Bromberg Group.
There's a big neon sign on the Tennessee line. It says live music tonight. I was just passing through with nothing to do. I decided to stop there for a while. Now, the first thing I spied when I walked inside was a girl who was playing the mandolin. The next thing that I heard, she was singing like a bird, and my heart went into a spin. Look out, mountain girl,
from the hill,
Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Look out, mountain girl, come fly away with me.
David Bromberg Quintet in the background there. They'll be playing here in Juneau tonight, starting at 7:30 tonight at the, is it 7 or 7:30? Let me just check the time here one time. This is their concert tonight, 7 o'clock at, it's over at the A&B Hall. Lots of venues around town. Pick up a copy of the program for Juno Jazz and Classics. Take a look. Lots of incredible opportunities. Incredible opportunities for weather right now. The 4 o'clock forecast from the Weather Bureau says that it's going to be like this for the next almost week. We've got clear tonight, down 35 to 47, and then tomorrow we get another day like today, 62. Southwest winds will slow down a little bit, 10, 20 miles per hour. 5 to 15 in the afternoon, and then Saturday night back to 32, 40. Sunday, we're back up to 60 degrees again. So 60-degree days, 32 to 40 nights. The wind's dying down a little bit. It's going to be a wonderful week for Juno Jazz and Classics to get underway. So you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We are broadcasting on K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay. Our translator in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek is K269 AO in K201, translates in Gustavus. K220BT is in Hoonah. K210 AS is the translator in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, we're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and from listeners like you. Monday at 3 on Juno Afternoon, Joan Pardis will be back hosting. She'll be highlighting the Theater at Latitude 58's production of The Miracle Worker. She'll talk to the folks about the upcoming Seas Sailing schedule. The Attica Attacka String Quartet will be here. They'll do a preview of their performances during the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Donnie Burris will be here to focus on summer camps at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. And the United Way will come in. Wayne Stevens will be here to talk about their literacy cruise. So, Juno Afternoon on Monday with Joan Pardis. Stay tuned.